Nice to catch up with Coach K, Mike Krzyzewski, Hall of Fame basketball coach, and, of course, the head coach of the Duke Blue Devils since 1980 and coming off another gold medal effort with the United States Olympic basketball team. Mike, I know you said afterwards that that was going to be your last national team. And indeed, now that you've had a chance to step back away from it a little bit, is that going to be the case?
Yeah, it is, Ron. And I think also that I think the powers to be would, you know, or would want that too. Just you know, it's been a great run with three world championships: Beijing, in the Olympics, Istanbul, and the world championships, and obviously London in the Olympics. And it's it takes a lot of time and effort, and it's good to, you know, to keep moving on. And I'll stay close to USA basketball in some regard. I'm not sure exactly what that will be, and that'll be determined later. You know, decisions like this and what they're going to do don't have to be made right now. They're probably, things won't be decided on just where everything's going to be at until next summer.
You know, one of the things I thought about is that, yes, it's one thing to win the gold medal in the Olympics and the World Championship, but I always thought that one of your goals, Mike, was to get the national basketball team back on track. Am I correct in that assumption?
Yeah, and Jerry Colangelo, who runs USA Basketball, you know, he and I said our goal would be to win the gold medal and to win the respect of our country, for basketball, our basketball team, and also win the respect of the world. And I think we've done that, and in fact, I know we've done that, and the players have been absolutely incredible in how they've, not just how they've played, but how they've handled themselves.
What was it that you did when you took over the national team that changed it? Was it an attitude? Was it an approach? Was it technical? What was it, Mike?
Well, I don't think it was just me, Ron. It was Jerry Colangelo, the people at USA Basketball, and then me and my staff. We just felt that everybody should be on the same page, and before anyone, you know, joined the program, the pool of players, Jerry talked to each one of them about what would be expected of them, and that we needed their commitment to not just to play well, but to act the way you're supposed to act, representing our country. And it wasn't an argument or anything. I mean, these guys said they would do it, and they did it, and you know, they were men of their word, but I think saying that up front and then adhering to that, to those standards, was critical in making sure that we had an environment that was conducive not only to win, but also to gain the respect of others.
I remember after the 2008 Olympics in Beijing, I asked you for your memory, the most vivid memory that you had, and you said about the players standing on the award stand with their hands over the hearts as they were playing the national anthem. How about this time around? What is the vivid memory you'll take away from the London Games?
Well, to be quite frank with you, the fact that my whole family was there when we won, as the last minute of the game, the joy of all the players was like a collegiate team. And then when I went off the court, all my grandchildren were right there, and my eight grandchildren were all there in one spot. And my daughters, actually the only person I wasn't able to get to right away was my wife. So it's like that, it wasn't just one thing, it was like the last minute of the game, and it was sheer joy, and you could see that in our players. And then leaving the court, there was my family right court side, and like a corner, it happened to be in the corner where our bench was, and being able to go over there and hug and kiss and high five, and that was pretty cool.
What was the difference in the competitive dynamic in London as compared to Beijing, Mike?
Well, I really think the teams were better in London. I think the world keeps getting better. Spain is just a terrific basketball team with the Gasols and Ibaka in their front line. And Navarro, is as good a score as there is in the world, you know, outside of the United States. And then Argentina is just so good. Ginobili is like the greatest competitor, and Scola is one of the tops, you know, top players of all time internationally. And Australia is good. France with Parker and a number of NBA players was outstanding. And I just feel like there's a greater chance to get beat. And with the condensed NBA season that we had, you know, guys were fried, really, you know, 8 days after the season was over with the championships. I mean, four of the guys who were in the championships were on our team. And an NBA player played a game every 1.6 days last season. And then we lost a lot of our big guys, and Dwight Howard, Bosch, and Blake Griffin, and then Dwayne was not able to play. So we took some hits just before the Olympics. And, you know, it meant that LeBron James had to play defensive center for us at times, which he did well. But that also puts him in more harm's way to get fouled. And there were more ways to lose, I thought, in London than there were at Beijing.
Has the rest of the world pushed the national team in this country up a level, or has the United States' high level of play pulled the rest of the world up to a higher level?
You know, probably both. You know, I mean, I think the basketball in the world keeps getting better. And, you know, remember, close to 20% of the NBA is are international players. And some of the stars in the NBA are international players. So as a result of that, you know, you only have five guys on the court at one time. And if you can get, you know, eight or nine NBA players and a few of them who are stars for a specific country, you get a chance to win. And there's not that awe factor. In other words, then eight or nine of those guys are accustomed to playing against LeBron James and Carmelo Anthony and Kobe Bryant or our teammates. And so there's a familiarity there that, you know, 20 years ago it wasn't there. There was not only we had more talent, but we also had that awe factor, which it's not there anymore.
Let me switch gears, talk about the upcoming college basketball season and the Duke Blue Devils. Tell me a little bit about your squad.
Well, I think we have a chance to be a really good team. We're hurting a little bit right now. We have 10 scholarship players, and I think all of them are good players, but two of them are out right now, or in limited duty. Seth Curry, who I think can shoot with anyone in the country as a senior, his playing time is limited because of a leg injury, and that may be something that goes on throughout the year. And then a real surprise for us in the preseason was our 7-foot redshirt center, Marshall Plumlee, at 240 pounds, 7 feet. Was playing great and hurt his foot in one of the individual workouts just before practice started, and he's out for at least a month. So our team's going to be built around Mason Plumlee and Ryan Kelly, who I think are two of the better players in the country. And Quinn Cook is got to do a good job for us at the point guard position, and then we have a lot of young guys who can fill in, and hopefully we get those two injured guys back.
The ACC is always a dogfight. What's the rest of the conference look like, Mike?
Well, you know, we're going to find out. I don't like to make predictions about the conference until I actually see the teams, but the team that has the most veterans coming back is NC State and Florida State. NC State has four starters back and has had a really good recruiting year, so a lot of people are picking them to win the conference. I think us in Carolina will always be very good. And Florida State had a great year last year under Leonard Hamilton, and they have one of the best competitors in the country in Snair. And they have, I think, three of their starters back. But up and down, you know, teams will be really good, well-coached, and this will be the last year before we go to 14 or 15 you know, in our conference when Syracuse and Pitt joined. And then I would hope, you know, there's some way that Notre Dame can join us at the same time a year from now when we go to 15.
Do you see any stability coming to college basketball? We've seen it in football, the jumping around from conference to conference and everything. You know, one of the things I've always enjoyed about our conversations, Mike, is that you've always been kind of the same voice in the wind out there. Where do you see things in college basketball now?
Well, I think if you gave a test to people about, you know, take 100 teams and put them in their conferences, you know, 10 years ago, a lot of people would go 100 for 100. And now if somebody had 80%, they might be good. And I don't think it's over, Ron. I think teams are still going to jockey around. The major conferences, I think, are not going to add multiple teams, but if they could add a team, and then what does that do for the conference that they left, you know, and that it's the domino effect, and that's what's happened, you know, when the Atlantic 10 lost teams to the Big East, then Horizon lost teams to the Atlantic 10. The Big East lost teams to the ACC, the Big 12, and all of a sudden, you know, the Atlantic 10 loses teams to the Big East. I don't think that's over with. I think that's going to still go on, and I think it'll go on for a few more years. I also believe that at some time there could be major changes in the way we look at college football and college basketball, and these conferences are getting so powerful and making so much money that I don't know that. The winds of change are out there. I mean, it's happening, obviously, at a real high level already. But I don't think the winds have subsided yet.
Yeah, I agree with you, Mike. I mean, I'm sitting out here in San Francisco, and I know that the deal that the Pac-12 cut for over $3 billion for their television network and everything. And to me, when I see that type of money, I get greatly concerned. Does it concern you as much?
Well, I think, you know, in one respect, I think it's great for the conferences and for the student athletes and the schools participating. But yeah, I do think it causes a wider gap between the major conferences and the other conferences. And the wider the monetary gap becomes, the wider the scope of or the vision of the conferences becomes, and that's why I see that, you know, there might be changes in numbers, but I think eventually there might be change in just how everything is done as a result of what's happening right now.
We only have a minute left, and as you know, I travel a lot to the Middle East. I'm headed back to Afghanistan and also to Djibouti, which I had to ask where the heck that was, and I found out it's in North Africa. But I always like to give you a chance in about 45 seconds to send out a shout to the troops that get a chance to hear us each night.
Yeah, well, you know, we just spent a great day at Fort Bragg and an evening with the troops, with the 82nd Airborne and the NCO Academy there, and our guys went through leadership reaction courses, PT, obstacle course, and I told the troops at Fort Bragg on numerous times during our day there that they were the best team in the world, and they were the most respected part of our society, and for us to spend a day on hallowed ground, on great ground, the ground of the best team in the world, was an honor. And so we just want to thank all our servicemen and women for the sacrifices they and their families are making to make sure that there's never a home game here in our country. And Godspeed to all of you.
I want to thank you, Mike. You've been a good friend, and you're always there every time I call. Have a good season. I'll stay in touch with you, and take care, my friend.
All right. Thanks so much, Ron. Thanks for all the great work you do.
Hall of Fame basketball coach Mike Krzyzewski. We continue on Sports Byline.